Turn me tender again. Fold me into you. Turn me tender again and mold me to new. Faith lost its promise and it bruised me deep blue. Turn me tender again through union with you. Amen. Please be seated. I think that any preacher who's standing up here this Sunday would be remiss to not mention the vile and evil slaying of 49 Muslims at the Al Noor Mosque and the Linwood Islamic Center in New Zealand this week by white supremacist terrorists. I think all I can really say is, Lord, have mercy. And any preacher preaching in these troubled days would be remiss to not address, at least every now and then, the fact that our world appears to be teetering towards an ecological apocalypse, and that both we and the powers that be seem either unable or certainly unwilling to make any concrete movements toward caring for our common future as they run outside. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, the temptation in looking at these situations, at any huge situation of hurt or pain or division or violence or exclusion in the world, or even the pain in my own life, that unresolved stuff, my temptation is either to fight, to rage with anger at the futility of it all, or perhaps more often to simply shut down, bury my head in the sand, and to flee. I generally avoid the news, but it was hard to avoid this week. And if you ask me, the problems of violence, pain, and suffering are just too much to face head on. So what is there to do but fight or flee? And yet, we gather here this afternoon because our little community somehow believes that the problems of pain, suffering, and violence, even extreme violence like we saw in New Zealand this week, in the world and in our lives, were not too much to take on for God, who in fact sent God's self, Jesus, to take them head on, to take the entirety of suffering and evil and violence upon himself. Now this is our story. But in our story, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves yet, for we are only in week 2 of our Lenten journey. We're not quite at the cross yet. And yet, as we heard the gospel read by Marilyn today, we are certainly heading that way. The cues are there. On the third day, I'll finish my work, Jesus says. We are heading towards the brink of the crux, so to speak. Jesus, in that first half of our reading, which is taken from Luke 13, is indeed on the road toward Jerusalem, toward his death, and the Pharisees, they approach him. Pharisees, by the way, in Luke are sometimes, like we think of them, kind of the shady religious types, but sometimes they do appear friendly, and we don't know if they have ulterior motives here or not, so we'll leave that to the side. But the Pharisees approach Jesus, and they say to him about Herod, he wants to kill you. And then I've appended on a bit of Luke 19, where Jesus' lament over Jerusalem has by that point turned in to open weeping. But interestingly, weep as he does, Jesus is not just meek or mild. His response to those Pharisees is, go and tell that fox for me, listen, I'm casting out demons and performing cures today and tomorrow, and on the third day I'll finish my work. Yet today, tomorrow, and the next day I must be on my way, because it is impossible for a prophet to be killed outside of Jerusalem. It's always hard to tell what the tone of Jesus is in these passages, but I think it's not impossible to read it like he's kind of flipping Herod the bird, so to speak. Listen, I'm kind of busy right now. I know you want to kill me, but I'm really kind of tied up at the moment, casting out demons, healing people, that kind of stuff, while you sit up there in your palace and lust for power. It's angry, Jesus' response. I think we can hear that resistance and anger in his language towards the empire. But I'm not sure it's just merely anger towards the empire. Because for Jesus, this is actually personal. This Herod who wants to kill him is also the one who beheaded his friend and cousin, John the Baptist, oh, not so long ago. So Jesus responds, perhaps a little defiantly, depending on how we read the tone. And then something remarkable comes out of Jesus' lips. Something very strange and bizarre. I find it even more strange and bizarre given the patriarchal frame of religion, and not just then, but now. Jesus says this. He says, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings. How often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings." It's remarkable to me that Jesus calls himself a mother hen. In the face of Herod the sly fox, he calls himself a hen. No, not a hunter, nor a coyote or a wolf or a jackal, which are the traditional predators of the fox, but a hen. It would have been my tact to take one of those names on. Woe, Jerusalem, you think you've got a fox? I'm a coyote, and we eat foxes. But no, Jesus says, I'm like a hen. And a mama hen at that. Now those of us who've been raised to think that God is only male and a muscle-flexing, awesome male at that may want to dismiss the passage as metaphor. But I would suggest today that the tradition that God is both male and female, or perhaps even neither male nor female, goes back way, way, way back to the earliest of our scriptures, where God makes us in God's image, male and female both. It goes back through Christian history, and though it's kind of a sideline tradition, it comes up even by the so-called church fathers. Listen to this. Do not take it that our God is male because of the masculine nouns God and Father. Is the Godhead female because in Greek the word is feminine? Such crude biological thinking would be pagan, not Christian. When was that written? 1975? No. The 4th century Gregory of Nazianzus, Archbishop of Constantinople, the head of the Eastern Church. Don't take it that our God is male. But the idea of Jesus, the mother hen, does more than challenge how we use language. Deconstructing language is fine. There's a lot of things that language does which is dangerous. But I think what's actually more important here is that that image of Jesus the mama hen, much like the incarnation itself, breaks down our view of the very nature of who God is. One of my favorite mystics and saints, Julian of Norwich, says this, and by the way, this is quoted on the Vatican website. If you Google Julian Godmother, the first page that comes up is God is our mother, Vatican.va. So this isn't obscure esoteric stuff. This is stuff, again, like Gregory of Nazianzus, which is at the heart of the Orthodox Church. It is a characteristic of God to overcome evil with good. Jesus Christ, therefore, who himself overcomes evil with good, is our true capital M, mother. Jesus Christ is our true mother. We received our being from Christ, and this is where his maternity starts. And with it comes the gentle protection and guard of love which will never cease to surround us. We worship a God who is as much Father as Mother. And it's why here on Sunday afternoons we decide to use both male and female images of God in our worship. And whatever images we use, we recognize that we worship a God of relentless tenderness. We worship a mothering God. Now, I recognize that it's actually quite dangerous to overgeneralize about mothers. We all have different experiences, and it can be problematic to link motherhood to nurture and tears. But at the risk this Sunday for just a moment of overgeneralizing, we do find in Jesus a mama. In Jesus, we find a God who wept at the loss of a close friend, who lamented and then wept over Jerusalem, not unlike, at least my mama used to weep over us when we went off the rails, a God who weeps over her children. So I would suggest this afternoon that each of us are called to delve into that mother-likeness, just like Christ. To weep, to live with lamenting, to live with broken-hearted sadness about it all. That word lament, I was hanging out with somebody this week from our community, and he said to me, I didn't know that word lament until I started hanging out at church. It actually comes from the Latin word to weep. And it's a rich and deep tradition, not unlike these quotes that I've read about God the Mother. It's a rich and deep tradition, our Psalms of lament. There's an entire book of Scripture which, coincidentally, God stays silent throughout, called Lamentations. Some of our best songs, Precious Lord, take my hand, lead me on, let me stand. I'm weak, I'm tired, I'm worn. Written by the Reverend Thomas A. Dorsey, the founder of modern African-American gospel music, when he got a telegram as he was traveling across Europe that his wife and children had been killed in a fire. It is well with my soul, even so it's well with my soul, Horatio Spafford, the writer who wrote it after his family were lost at sea and they were taking the boat out. And the captain of the boat said, it was right here about where that boat went down. And he said to himself, when peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrow like sea billows roll, whatever my lot has taught me to say, it's well with my soul. A lament of pain and of hurt. So today, whether the laments in our hearts be about New Zealand or ecological hopelessness, which, by the way, I should mention, there are little glimmers of hope, like thousands of students walking out of school. It's not all hopeless, but there's still lots to do. Whether our laments in our hearts be about New Zealand, ecological hopelessness, the loss of a family or a friend, family member or a friend, or the deep sadness of the world, our laments, they are not in vain. Laments have a purpose, laments have a cost, a requiem playing, it gathers the lost, says Welsh singer-songwriter Martin Joseph. It's a song which we'll be playing as we do our prayer stations today. Yes, we can choose to be locked alone in despair, or we can live instead into the posture of active lament, of weeping together alone and, even better, in community. We can choose to have hearts of stone form around us so that we can be blocked from all of that stuff, or we can ask Jesus to give us hearts of flesh, open to the pain and suffering of the world. The Buddhist writer Pema Chodron notes that this, that anxiety, heartbreak, and tenderness mark the in-between state. And that's the kind of place we usually want to avoid. The challenge is to stay in the middle rather than buy into struggle and complaint. The challenge is to let it soften us rather than to make us more rigid and afraid. Let it soften us instead of making us more rigid and afraid. N.T. Wright suggests that the hen passage for him invokes the image of a barnyard fire. In those situations where there's a fire, mother hens have been known to gather their chicks under their wings. And when the fire was out, the farmers would often find a dead hen with her chicks still chirping alive under her wings. That suggests today that as Jesus' followers, as followers of Jesus, the mother hen, lament is the first and primary posture we can take in the face of evil and suffering. Somebody this morning, I preached this, somebody told me that until their 50th birthday, they barely ever cried, and they just made a decision on their 50th birthday, as she said this, she was crying, that I am going to not be that person. I'm going to let this out. Lament is the first and primary posture to have in the face of evil and suffering. And then in our weeping lament, I suggest we too can be like mama hens, sheltering the most vulnerable in our world under our wings, even at the cost of our own death. So yes, like Jesus, we need to weep. We need to weep over Jerusalem. And this week, perhaps our call is to weep over that city in New Zealand, for the Al Noor Mosque and for the Linwood Islamic Center. Perhaps the call is to weep for our households, for our own broken hearts, for our communities, for our very broken, messed up churches, for our cities, and for God's world. Yes, we can fight, or we can flee from the pain, or we can take on that strong, sacrificial, and relentless tenderness of our mother hen Jesus as our cue to face it all head on. For God did not flee from the brokenness in creation. God also did not fight and send angel armies or yet another flood to wipe us out. Instead, God sent a vulnerable baby who grew up and would rather die by state torture than fight. God sent Jesus, who walked weeping all the way to the cross, to set it all straight. God sent a mother hen who, yes, would take on the fox, but not by becoming like the fox. Jesus took on evil by sheltering us in tender, tender weeping love. So this is this Lent, our journey to the cross. It is our journey as Jesus' followers. And in it, all we can really do is say, Lord, turn us tender again. Turn us tender again. Turn us tender again. Lord, have mercy. Christ, have mercy. Lord, have mercy.